हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 19, chapter 2. Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu freely bestows the benediction of love of God, Krishna, which allows one to return to Krishna's abode through the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. This chanting process is far more effective in this age than artificial attempts to perform severe penances and austerities. Srila Prabhupada concludes, therefore, one need not undergo severe penances for many thousands of years. One need only learn how to love Krishna and be always engaged in his service. Sevan mukhe hi jivadau swayam eva sparatyada. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.34. Then one can very easily go back home, back to Godhead. Instead of bringing the Lord here for some material purpose, to have a son or whatever else, if we go back home, back to Godhead, our real relationship with the Lord is revealed, and we eternally engage in our eternal relationship. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we gradually develop our eternal relationship with the Supreme Person, and thus attain the perfection called Sarup Siddhi. Right? So by chanting, we gradually develop our return, and thus perfection. We should take advantage of this benediction and go back home, back to Godhead. Right? So, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.10.338, purport. So, the Lord coming here is the Son, then the problem is what's our qualification to be a parent? Right? So instead of Him having to come here, and it's just, you know, at least by in our concept, just He's our son. So it's just our family and God is our son. Right? So if you're the Father, God's the Son, who's the Holy Ghost? Ah, the mother-in-law, right?
She's just a ghost.
Huh? She's just the ghost. Okay. So it's a material purpose because they just want to be with the Son. You know, God is the Son. So that's the thing. It's not actually technically spiritual from that. We know that they are eternal associates, so for them it's not a problem. But they're pointing it out that we won't try to do the same thing. They are the eternal parents. They come here so that there's a background for everything. Therefore, they do these penances and austerities to get God as their Son. Right? And so then it goes down. But then that way also, then that humility is there, and no, but we're not the real parents, and all these kind of things. So here is that, then we see Prabhupada's point that you go back home, back to Godhead. And then we gradually engage, and we eternally engage in our eternal, by chanting, we gradually develop our relationship, and thus attain the perfection called Sarup Siddhi. Right? So Sarup Siddhi is not having the spiritual form. The Sarup Siddhi is now perfecting that form to be used in a relationship with Krishna based on affection. That's Sarup Siddhi. Does that make sense? We've already had the Sarup, but because there's no Siddhi, then we ended up here. Right? And Siddhi means that something is finished. It's cooked. Siddha. Right? So it's properly boiled, but instead of being boiled there and becoming siddha, we come here and get, you know, boiled in oil until we decide to go back to there, right? You know. Although Vasudeva and Devaki desire that Krishna become their son, it should be understood that they are devotees eternally situated in love of Krishna, as stated by the Lord Himself, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.39. Mohitao Deva Mayaya Vasudeva Devaki is pure devotees who are covered by His internal potency. Right, so then they are covered in all that. Then they think they have to get the Lord as their son, so they perform all these austerities, right? In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 4.1.20, the great sage Atri Muni prayed to the Lord, Prajam Atma Samam Mahyam Prayachatu. Kindly be pleased to offer me a son exactly like you. Atri Muni said he wanted a son exactly like the Lord, and therefore he was not a pure devotee, because he had a desire to be fulfilled, and that desire was material. He wanted a son like the Lord. It doesn't say it has to be the Lord. Just a very qualified son like the Lord. Right? If he had desired the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a child, he would have been completely free of material desires because he would have wanted the Supreme Absolute Truth. But because he wanted a similar child, his desire was material. Thus, Atri Muni cannot be counted among the pure devotees. Vasudeva and Devaki, however, did want the Lord himself, and therefore they were pure devotees of the Lord. In this verse, therefore, Vasudeva's statements, Apu Jayam Na Mokshaya Mohito Deva Mayaya, should be taken to mean that Krishna's internal potency bewildered Vasudeva so that he would desire Krishna as his son, though he's eternally the parent. This paved the way for the Lord's appearance as the son of his loving devotees. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the word Vishvato Bhayat indicates that Vasudeva very much feared the curse of the Brahmins. As one can become perfect by worshipping the Vaishnavas, by displeasing the Vaishnavas, one can bring about all misfortune. Thus, Vasudeva feared the curse delivered by the Brahmanas at Pindaraka Tirtha, Sukadeva Goswami said. Right? Because he appreciates the position of Vaishnava, so he knows how powerful that is. So what will he be afraid of? Right? He's not going to be afraid of, you know, the loss of facility or, you know, even the body and all. What he'll be worried about is the loss of the relationship with the Lord, that situation of serving the Lord. Yeah? Yes? No?
But can this be lost? It's not possible.
No, but it's not that they're not fearful of that. Just like Krishna leaves Vrindavan, can they be separated? No, but at the same time as they will feel separation. So, yeah, so all these feelings are there to enhance relationship, but actually, how can the living entity ever be separated from the Lord since he's part and parcel of the Lord? Right? But the interaction on that personal platform, that can be seen or not seen. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Devarshi Narada was pleased by the questions of the highly intelligent Vasudeva because they suggested the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They reminded Narada of Lord Krishna. Thus Narada replied to Vasudeva as follows. Because by hearing this, he remembers Krishna, sees them connected to Krishna, so he's pleased. So now he'll talk about it connected to Krishna. Sri Narada said, O best of the Satvatas, you have quite correctly asked about the eternal duty of the living entity towards the Supreme Lord. Such devotional service to the Lord is so potent that its performance can purify the entire universe. Footnote 1. A similar statement was made by Sri Sukadeva Goswami in the first verse of the second canto when he congratulated Parikshit Maharaj for asking about Krishna. Quote, My dear King, your question is glorious. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and is approved by all transcendentalists. 2.1.1. Similarly, Srila Sudra Goswami congratulated the inquiring sages of Naimisharanya in the following words. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna, and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.5. So that's the nature of questions. How you're going to improve or develop your spiritual understanding, your relationship with Krishna, your devotional service. And then like here, the quality is how others can get benefit from that applying, you know, hearing that question and applying that in their life. Right? Pure devotional service rendered to the Supreme Lord is spiritually so potent that simply by hearing about such transcendental service, by chanting its glories in response, by meditating on it, by respectfully and faithfully accepting it, or by praising the devotional service of others, even persons who hate the demigods and all other living beings can be immediately purified. Today, you have made me remember my Lord, the supremely blissful personality of Godhead, Narayana. Right? So, just hearing about the devotional service is so glorious that just you hear about it, you get purified. You hear about it, you appreciate it, you accept it. You know, you would like to be able to do such service. All these things will just be purified. It's so powerful. You don't even have to actually technically do what they're doing. You simply have to be able to appreciate it and surrender to that and accept that that's what would be the process, what you would like to do. Does that make sense? Yes.
So this is the process that devotees in Shankaras follow. They just appreciate.
They only appreciate. But the natural thing is you will want to do service. It doesn't mean that you won't do service. But the point is just this much is so glorious. Let alone it before, because it says, by respectfully and faithfully accepting it. So in that, it could be respectfully and faithfully accepting it means that you're actually performing it, or it can mean that you just accept that this is bona fide service. This service is glorious. So you don't have a doubt about it. Right? So just that we hear, but if we doubt it, that's why you always see in the chapter, it doesn't say just anybody who hears this chapter will get this benefit. Anyone who hears with faith, right, like that, then they'll get the benefit. So, the BBT purport states, Srila Jiva Goswami has stated, Narayanas tadrisha dharame madhya guru rupo narayan No, Narayanar Rishi. The word Narayan in this verse refers to the incarnation of Godhead, Narayana Rishi, who acted as Narada's spiritual master in this dharma. Srila Jiva Goswami has also pointed out, Smarita iti Krishno pasana veshena tasyapi vishmar ranat. The word smarita, he is brought back to memory, indicates that because of Narada's absorption in the worship of Krishna, he had forgotten Lord Narayana. In other words, if intense engagement in devotional service makes one sometimes forget the personality of Godhead by Krishna's arrangement, such a sincere servitor will again be reminded of the personality of Godhead. So he's so absorbed in the worship that he may forget the Lord in the process, but the Lord will arrange that he comes back and is... remind it again. He remembers again. Yes.
How can somebody be absorbed in the service and be forgetful to God?
Because you're looking at just the application of it. You may sometimes seemingly forget about the Lord. Not that someone like Narada would forget. They'd always be engaged in it. But the remembrance of the Lord directly is always so wonderful. So he's doing service. He's always chanting. He's always that. But then in that, then sometimes when he remembers the Lord himself directly, then, right? It means there's so many aspects of the Lord. So you're remembering one aspect, let's say you're thinking one pastime, and another pastime comes up. And so then you'll remember the Lord in that way. So, Sri Narada continued, let us say, you're originally from where?
Bombay.
And of Bombay?
Of South.
Okay. And of South?
Marine Lines. Chopadi.
No, but that's not South. That's I'm talking about Maharashtra.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, then this may not apply. It's not quite South enough. you're eating the salties, then you eat the sweet. Then you can't eat any more sweet, but you'd like to eat more sweet. Then someone reminds you of the dahi water that's salty that you ate before. And then by eating that, now you can eat more sweet. So would you be happy with that remembrance? Someone reminds you of that. Would that be good? Yes. So it's all good, but it becomes better. Yeah? Okay. Everyone relates to that, or no?
Engaged in the activities.
If you're engaged in the activities, how can you not be remembering the Lord? Ah, come on, that's as easy as falling off a log, right? Yeah.
This is absorption in the worship of Krishna, that activity.
Sri Narad Muni continued, "The Supreme Lord is so auspicious that whoever hears and chants about Him becomes completely pious. To explain the devotional service of the Lord, sages have related the ancient history of the conversation between the great soul, King Videha, and the sons of Rishabha. Swayambhuva Manu had a son named Maharaj Priyavrata, and among Priyavrata's sons was Agnidra. From Agnidra was born Nabhi, and whose son was known as Rishabhdev. Sri Rishabhdev is accepted as an expansion of the Supreme Lord, Vasudev. He incarnated in this world to propagate those religious principles that lead living entities to ultimate liberation. He had 100 sons, all perfect in Vedic knowledge. Of the 100 sons of Lord Rishabhdev, the eldest, Bharata, was completely devoted to Lord Narayana. It is because of Bharata's fame that this planet is now celebrated as the great Bharat Varsha. King Bharata rejected this material world, considering all types of material pleasure temporary and useless. Leaving his beautiful young wife and family, he worshipped Lord Hari by severe austerities and attained the abode of the Lord after 3 lifetimes. 9 of the remaining sons of Rishabhdev became the rulers of the 9 islands of Bharat Varsha, and they exercised complete sovereignty over this planet. 81 sons became twice-born brahmanas and helped initiate the Vedic path of fruit of sacrifices, karmakanda. The 9 remaining sons of Rishabha were greatly fortunate sages who worked vigorously to spread knowledge of the absolute truth. They wandered about naked and were very well versed in spiritual science. Their names were Kavi, Havir, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Pipalayana, Adihotra, Drumila, Chamasa, and Karabhajana. The BBT purport states, Nimi, the king of Videha, asked the following 9 questions of the 9 Yogendras, the saintly sons of Rishabha. 1. What is the highest good? Chapter 2, verse 30. 2. What are the religious principles, dharma, natural proclivities, swabhava, behavior, achar, speech, vakya, and outward symptoms, lakshana of a Bhagavat, a Vaishnava devotee of the Lord? Right? Because the highest good will be devotional service, so then what's the symptoms of such a person? That's in 244. Footnote 2. Arjuna asked similar question in Bhagavad Gita. O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak and what is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? 3. What is the external energy of Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, in 3.1? 4. How can one become disassociated from this Maya, 3.17? 5. What is the true identity of Brahman, 3.34? 6. What are the 3 types of karma, namely karma based on the enjoyment of fruit of works, karma offered to the Supreme Lord, and Naishkarmya? 341. 7. What are the various types, pastimes of the various incarnations of God? 41. 8. What is the aim or destination of one who is against the Supreme Lord and devoid of bhakti, in other words, a non-devotee? Verse 5.1. And 9, what are the respective colors, forms, and names of the 4 Yuga avatars, the 4 incarnations of the Supreme Lord who appear in the 4 ages, and what is the process for worshipping each of them? 5.19. The transcendental answers to these inquiries were given by the great devotees, Kavi, Havis, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Pipalayana, Avihotra, Drumila, Chamasa, Karabhajana. These nine Paramah- and Karabhajana. These nine Paramahamsas answer the nine questions each in turn in the following verses. 1:233-43, the second question 2:45-55, third question 3:33-16, the fourth 3:18-33, 5:35-40, 6:343-55, 7:42-23, 8:52-18, and 9:520-42. Sri Narada continued, "These sages wandered the earth, seeing the entire universe with all its gross and subtle objects as a manifestation of the Supreme Lord and as non-different from the Self." Right? So, we see is that they're all a manifestation of the Supreme Lord because it's His potency, the transformation, everything becomes all these different... He takes on the form of all this, the potency of it, the form, everything like that. The same time as they're non-different from the Self, meaning when you have the Supreme Self, that's been established, but from the Self of what you're seeing, what you're involved in, then that is a manifestation of the the external form of what your consciousness is. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense. You have a particular consciousness, by that, then you get a particular body that's in a particular situation. That therefore you can perceive that particular kind of things according to your nature. Right? Yeah. So it's that combination. It's the Lord, but at the same time it's why it's in this particular form and all that. One, of course, the modes of nature, but it's according to your mentality. Right? Your mentality is different, you'll be in a different manifestation of the Lord and His energy. Right? BBT purport states, "It should be noted that in this verse, the word sada sat atmakam, or made up of gross and subtle objects, does not refer to material and spiritual. This universe is stated to be composed of sat and asat, gross and subtle material objects. According to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the very subtle, quote, the very subtle state within the manifest world is known as the unmanifest, and the realm beyond the manifest world is called transcendental." Within the covering surrounding the manifest, in the region of the time factor, is the phase of material existence experienced by the controlling deities. In this phase exist the two functions, cause, asat, and effect, sat. In this universe, which is a third tattva, or reality, apart from and containing both sat and asat, and which is a form of the Supreme Lord, it is impossible to produce any contradiction to the non-dual absolute.
Why causes sat? Asat? The opposite.
Because I think here is meaning gross and subtle. They're using sat not sat to mean gross and subtle. So the two functions, the cause, that will be the metaphysical, and that's the asat. And then the effect is sat, what you see here. And then gross and subtle, that's how it's being used. It does not mean material and spiritual, how we generally using sat-asat. Here it's meaning sat-asat, meaning it's subtle and it's gross. Because in any case, even if you are dealing with the materialist, it's all asat. It may be gross and subtle, but it's all asat, because its effect is that. And for the devotee, they see everything connected to the Lord. So whether it's gross or subtle, its effect will be sat. So we're not; it's not being used in that term yet. Right? So it's impossible to produce any contradiction to the non-dual absolute truth. So he's non-dual because it's all him. Right? And we're as part and parcel as his modes of nature. And so according to those combinations, you get all these different things. But it's all happening within him, within his directions, and he is all that. Right? So therefore, then, here, then, the sadasat will mean what's subtle and what's gross. In other words, although ignorant, materialistic scientists may zealously carry out research to find a material principle that can negate or render unnecessary the existence of God. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati clearly states that since the universe is an emanation from the Lord, and therefore spiritually identical with Him, there cannot possibly exist anything within the universe, anywhere within the universe, a material law, principle, or phenomena that in any way contradicts the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. In fact, the entire universe, along with the spiritual sky, exists as eternal testimony to the unlimited glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. With this understanding, the nine yogendras were traveling about the earth in transcendental bliss. Because they're going around, they're in transcendental bliss, so they see everything in connection with the Lord, so they're always absorbed in the Lord, they're always associating with the Lord. So you get the idea that they possibly also may be Shanta Bhaktas. Or at least they're on the Paramahamsa stage, so they're looking at the universe like this. How they're absorbed in the Lord on the, you know, in beyond that, then so far hasn't mentioned. Sri Narada continued, "The nine Yogendras are liberated souls who travel freely to the planets of the demigods. The perfected mystics, the sadhyas, the heavenly musicians, the yakshas, the human beings, and the minor demigods, such as the kinaras and the serpents." No mundane force can check their free movement. And exactly as they wish, they can travel as well to the worlds of the sages, the angels, the ghostly followers of Lord Shiva, the Vidyadharas, the Brahmanas, and the cows. So they can go anywhere. They're not limited that they, like someone like Indra, he can go up to his level. You know, if he goes into other places, there might be trouble, or he can't get there and that, but they're unimpeded because being liberated, there's nothing within the material, the modes can't control them. Or limit them. So they can go from Brahmaloka down to Patala and anything in between that they want to travel to. Right? Does that make sense? Can mean. Or there may be a Sarabi planet where it's all full of cows. I'm not sure. Because you get the idea that they're moving freely within all the planets within the universe. So it looks like there's a cow planet. Once in Ajanabha, the former name of the earth, they came upon the sacrificial performance of the great soul, Maharaj Nimi, which was being carried out under the direction of elevated sages. So they were traveling around the universe and they happened to come across Maharaj Nimi performing a sacrifice with other great sages there. And so then they dropped in. "My dear king, seeing those pure devotees of the Lord who rival the sun in brilliance, everyone present, the former performer of the sacrifice, the brahmanas, and even the sacrificial fires, stood in respect." Like, as the sacrificial fire, it would be Agni Dev. And so the demigods, why they wouldn't stand in respect of such sages. Right? "King Videha, Nimi, understood that the nine sages were exalted devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, overjoyed at their auspicious arrival, he offered them suitable sitting places and worshipped them in a proper way, just as one would worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Overwhelmed by transcendental joy, the king humbly bowed his head and then proceeded to question the nine sages. These nine great souls glowed with their own effulgence and thus appeared equal to the four Kumaras, the sons of Lord Brahma." Right? So, just as they're transcendentally situated, like that, and unattached to anything and just move around, and are situated, you know, in that position of that, how you say? What was the term used here? Exalted devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So then they appear in that same way, that same effulgence. Verses 28 to 43. Maharaj Nimi's first question answered by Kavi. King Videha said, I think that you must be direct associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is famous as the enemy of the demon Madhu. Indeed, the pure devotees of Lord Vishnu wander throughout the universe not for their personal selfish interest, but to purify all the conditioned souls. For the conditioned souls, the human body is most difficult to achieve, and it can be lost at any moment. Right? So it's easy to lose, it's hard to get. Right? Because there's 8,400,000 options. And don't worry, they can be lost just as easy also. So don't think that we're being discriminated against. Right? But to attain the human form, then that's difficult, because then that is the opportunity that you can take up spiritual life. But I think that even those who have achieved human life rarely gain the association of pure devotees, who are dear to the Lord of Vaikuntha. Therefore, O completely sinless ones, I ask you to kindly tell me what the supreme good is. After all, even half a moment's association with pure devotees within this world of birth and death is a priceless treasure for any man. Okay. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 29 to 30 to Bhagavad Arkramichimala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti. Bhakti Anukulya Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. So, association of devotees, that's very favorable. Right? Please speak about how one engages in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Do you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics? When a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. So if you give up the material world, you surrender to Krishna, so you engage your senses in his service rather than in sense gratification, then Krishna will give himself. But if you're engaged in sense gratification, then he'll just reciprocate with you through the senses in that way, according to your position. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, when a guest comes, one must ask about his welfare. But to inquire to Atmaramas, who are of the very form of auspiciousness, this is inappropriate by its very nature. But in other words, if the Navayogendras show up, you don't start talking about the weather. You know, or asking, well, you guys have no clothes, you don't feel cold, you guys want something, you know, kind of, you know, yeah, you don't do that. To ask about their health is a useless question. Therefore, one should ask about spiritual welfare only. This may be asked later. What is the rush? You know, why we're rushing? You know? Half a moment of the treasure of your association is valuable. If suddenly one attains this treasure, why should one delay in asking about the desired goal with enthusiasm? I have special good fortune because you are staying here for a long time. But he's come that to take part in the yajna, so he has them for some time. But the point is half a moment is a treasure, so why waste it? Because these other things aren't there. It means they're not playing a part where the whole hosting thing goes on, because they're just transcendentally situated. And that's the way they're acting. Does that make sense? They're renounced, they're moving in that way, so you don't have to do the others. But when we see the Pandavas showed up, they're playing the role of Kshatriyas as householders and that. So all those etiquettes would apply. But with them, it doesn't have to apply. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Narad Muni said, O Vasudeva, while Maharaj Nimi had thus inquired from the 9 Yogendras about devotional service to the Lord, those best of saintly persons sincerely thanked the king for his questions and spoke to him with affection in the presence of the members of the sacrificial assembly and the brahmana, priests. Right, so not only will the king get benefit, but all those who are at the sacrifice. Right, all the sages, all the brahmanas there, anybody else, so they'll all get this benefit. So that's why it's such special questions. Sri Kavi said, I consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by his falsely identifying himself with the temporary material world can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Footnote 4. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 33 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 12, entitled Devotional Service and Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. So, yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, O King, I see that all dharmas have an element of fear, but bhakti gives fearlessness. I consider the highest goal to be bhakti, from which there is no fear from time, karma, or other obstacles, right? Because let's say you're doing other dharmas, there's a fear of it's not done properly, some obstacle is there, something comes up, you know, or the aspect that there may be some aspect of detachment that one might, you know, find a bit fearful and all these different things. You know, like not eating until breakfast, all these. Yeah. The chief qualification is mentioned. A person is disturbed by his thoughts of body and family, which are difficult to give up. This means he must desire to give up attachment to body, house, and other objects unfavorable for bhakti. When one performs that worship, fear is destroyed by the Paramatma. Right? Krishna in the heart will destroy that. So footnote 5. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Right, so whatever whether you're already situated transcendentally, you're following the path of renunciation, or you're engaging within the standard social environment. Any of those, when they endeavor for what they're looking for, following in the footsteps of the acharyas to please the Lord, then that is the way that they'll become fearless and free from all this, material contamination. They will be elevated beyond. Yes? No? Very good? Kind of? Okay. And so that's destroyed by Paramatma. Paramatma sees, then he arranges. But you have to want to give it up, he'll remove it. So we can't remove it, otherwise we would have already done that, right? But we can't. He can remove it. But he'll only remove it if we surrender to him, because that means we're not interested in. Right? Why should he remove either the interest in or the reactions to material desire if we still have the desire? Right? Because it's necessary. You have a desire, there must be a result. Right? Does that make sense? So then if you destroy that, then what will you do? You won't be satisfied. But when you give up the desire for sense enjoyment, then at that point, what's the need of the reactions, pious or impious, to your previous actions? Does that make sense?
It's difficult to give up the desire. So can we pray to the Lord that he should give up the desire, because we cannot do it ourselves?
It's difficult to remove the desires because we can't.
Yeah, so praying to the Lord for the removal of desires.
Who else would you pray to?
Yeah, to the Lord and to the Vaishnavas.
I mean, Shah Rukh's a nice guy, but I probably wouldn't go with him. Amitabh Bachchan, now he's a big guy, but even him still, I don't think it would work like that, even if you dress him up and, you know, like that.
The Lord and the Vaishnavas.
Yes. So, therefore, O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Yes? No?
Yeah, this is fine, Maharaj. But constant chanting of the holy name is very, very difficult at this stage.
Constant chanting of the holy name. Why is that so difficult? Oh.
Because the taste is not...
So it's the songs from that... Amitabh or Shah Rukh sang that are the problem.
No. Not the songs.
Not the songs. The dance?
No.
The outfit?
The
Neither taste for this or that. But at least it's a progress, because before there was a lot of taste for this and no taste for that or interest. So now at least there's no taste for this. There's an interest in a taste for that, though you don't have it.
Yes.
So, therefore, then following, in other words, the devotional process, that's the only way you're going to get there. Sadhana bhakti, that's what was mentioned before. And the sadhana bhakti is, I consider that one whose intelligence constantly disturbed by his falsely identifying himself in the material world can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Bhaktivinoda Thakur then counts that in sadhana bhakti. So that means you may not be. But the point is you're trying to get there. So if you don't know constant chanting is what you're trying to get to, you'll never try. Okay? In this regard, Lord Shiva spoke the following prayer to the Supreme Lord while instructing the Pachetas. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-53. My dear Lord, those who desire to purify their existence must always engage in meditation upon your lotus feet, as described above. Those who are serious about executing their occupational duties and who want freedom from fear must take to this process of bhakti yoga. So there isn't any other process. Sri Kavi continued, even ignorant living entities can very easily Anja come to know the Supreme Lord if they adopt those means prescribed by the Supreme Lord himself. Right, so that was the point of the Bhagavat Marg. What process Krishna gives, you adopt that, then that's what's going to work. The process recommended by the Lord is to be known as Bhagavat Dharma, or devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he recommends this, so we follow this. He explains it in Gita. And so then if we take that up, we follow that, then that's how we're going to come to the perfectional platform. Yeah? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the characteristics of Bhagavad Dharma are described. Varnashram was spoken by Manu and others. But because bhakti is most secret, the Lord himself speaks it now. Oh, the Lord himself speaks it. Know the method for quickly... Okay. Know the method for quickly attaining one's benefit, even for ignorant persons, to be Bhagavat Dharma. So everyone, that's the system everybody can benefit. Why? Because everybody's the soul. That's why everybody can follow it. Now, other religious processes, unless you have the material qualification for it, in other words, the karma for it, you can't be involved in those. Not at least very effectively. Right? If you don't have much intelligence, how you'll practice, you know, the path of Gyan. Does that make sense? You know, if you're a... Yeah. So, the whole point is they are dependent upon your conditioning. Well, the Bhagavat Marg is not. You may apply, you may engage your conditioning, but it doesn't matter what it is. Okay. Right?
You see, in bhakti even, that it depends upon the desire, the strength of the desire of believing in it. For some desire more, so they advance more, more quickly. And some, so can we say that it also depends on their conditioning?
No.
Then what it depends on?
On their desire as a soul.
So it's nothing to do with the condition.
Zero. Because if it depends upon the conditioning, then that means the better the quality of the conditioning, the better the quality of the bhakti. So bhakti is dependent on karma. Therefore, then, the more we work on good qualities and uplifting ourselves and altruism and philanthropism and all these being a nice guy, great guy, and politically correct and all the right things, then our bhakti will flourish. And if we don't do these, then there's no chance at all that you can ever become devotionally developed because you're not a nice guy. Does that make sense? So the whole point is if you have the desire, it moves forward. Because even you have somebody with all good qualities, it doesn't mean that they're interested in pure devotional service, like daksha. You know, you're not going to get technically a more maturely pious person in Karmakanda than him. But he's not interested. You don't see him talking about pure devotional service. The Hamsaguya prayers, he recognized the position of the Lord. But I don't think in those prayers he asked for pure devotion.
No, he doesn't ask.
Yeah. But he recognizes the Lord's position and knows how he, you know, he performing his duties is dependent upon the Lord. He knows that much. But he's not interested in pure devotion. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it's not based on that. You can engage that in Krishna's service, your position. But it's not based on that. It's very important to note that. That's why the living entity at any point can surrender to Krishna. It has nothing to do with their conditioning. So this thing is, oh no, but they've done so much nonsense, you know, they can't surrender to Krishna. It has nothing to do with that. You know what I'm saying? Our own moralism, our own concept of religious, justice, then we tend to take it as more important than the bhakti itself. But that's not favorable for devotional service. So that's the whole problem. Because if we do that, then it's a difficult thing. So Krishna reveals it, then it's known. Otherwise, it's not known. We'll only know the 20 forms of religion and practice those, because by that we will get, you know, pious benefit. From pious benefit, we get fruitive. We get the results. By those results, then we can enjoy life. And so we'll just endeavor for that until we find that we don't enjoy life, and then we'll get skeptical, and then we'll give it up, then we'll take up the path of yawn, and then we'll do that for a while until we get frustrated with that, then we'll reject all of that, then we'll become a voidist, and then there's nothing and all that, and when we get tired of nothingness, since nothingness means anything goes because nothing exists anyway, and so it doesn't matter what you do, then we'll get back into sense gratification. Like that, and then because we're desiring sense gratification, but we're not getting what we want, it's always blocked by the reactions to improper behavior. We'll come to the understanding that proper behavior then will give proper material results, and so therefore we'll take up the process of these 20 different varieties of religion. Right? And all that over thousands of births. You know? Yeah. According to Srila Sita Swami, the word anja, easily, which is used in this verse, is explained in the next verse. Sri Kavis continued, O King, one who accepts this process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead will never blunder on his path in this world, right? Because if it's for Krishna, what's the problem? Because the mechanical usage of your facilities, that's temporary anyway. So there can't actually be a fault there. Because it's already temporary. That already means it's at fault. You know, and going back to the material and spiritual definition, then it's asat. So what's perfect about asat? Right? But you're doing it to please Krishna, that's sat. That's perfect. So how can they blunder? Even while running with eyes closed, he will never trip or fall. So he's absorbed in Krishna. So what can go wrong? Because wrong means you forget Krishna. So you just go forward and practice the process. You'll always develop. That's why Prabhupada says, you follow what you should. It's automatic. Right? Automatic doesn't mean you do nothing. Because even it means think about it. Because the idea, what's projected is automatic means you do nothing. But let's say you have an automatic dishwasher. What do you have to do to make it automatically wash the dishes?
Push the button.
Push the button. And if you put, yes. So you have to act. Does it have to be plugged in?
Yes.
Did you have to actually go out and buy it? Before buying it, did you select it? Did you have to have money? Did you have to get it transferred to your house and then set up? Did you have to take care of the guy that came to set it up? You know, so he ends up with, you know, some, you know, leftover cookies or something like that, okay? Then, do the dishes themselves get in there themselves? No, you have to put them in there. So basically, you have to rinse them off, and the only thing that it does is wash off the oiliness on the plate.
Makes them shiny.
Makes them shiny, okay.
Especially the glass.
But that you can do with some vinegar.
Hmm? Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's automatic. You're involved in the process, and then the dishes will be cleaned. So if you're practicing sadhana bhakti and continually practicing, it will automatically give the results. Right? If you stop, they won't give the results, but it won't be lost. But if you're continuous, then it will automatically give the results. So endeavor is always there, and then results then are coming. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The power of the process is explained. Taking shelter of bhakti, just having faith in the process. What to speak of performing it, a person will never be strongly affected by pride. So if you have a faith in the process, then you won't be affected by pride, let alone if you engage in devotional in the process. So not being affected by pride, that means you will never trip or fall. Right? Though one is ignorant at present, closing the eyes, if one performs bhakti without awareness, it is not a fault. What to speak then of performing bhakti with awareness? Okay, so that means even the newest person, their performance of bhakti will give the good result. Yeah. The B.B. Chupurpurt states, the Vaishnava Acharyas in their page 18. Slight difference, okay. You see?
Yeah, this was not in the middle.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You had this thing, then you had the quote, and then this. And I thought, didn't we just do that? Yeah, okay. The Vaishnavacharyas in their commentaries on this verse have illustrated in various ways the vast superiority of bhakti yoga or pure devotional service. In this connection, Sridhar Swami states, even if running with both eyes closed, a devotee on this path of Bhagavad Dharma will not stumble. Closing one's eyes refers to being in ignorance of standard Vedic literatures. As is stated, right, you don't know all the literatures, you don't know all the Gita and all that, but you've come to the temple, devotees engage you in some service, you have faith in that, you will advance. Then by following the process, you're hearing and chanting, then you'll learn these literatures. Right? But for the materialist, until he knows, like for the jnani, unless he knows his knowledge, he can't apply it and get results. But the devotee, just having faith and following the process as given by the great personalities, he's already getting the benefits even though he doesn't actually know or understand how it works. As it is said, the Shruti and Smriti scriptures are the two eyes of the Brahmanas. Lacking one of them, a Brahmana is half blind, and deprived of both, he is considered completely blind. Right, because some only accept Shruti, not Smriti, some are only into Smriti, not Shruti, but they use both. In Bhagavad Gita 10:10-11, the Lord has clearly stated that even if a devotee is lacking in Vedic knowledge or ignorant of Vaishnava literature, the Lord personally enlightens him from within his heart if the devotee is actually engaged in loving service to the Lord. Right? That's the Tesham Evanukam Partam. So he will remove all the improper, he'll reveal all these things. He'll see that what's going on. Because you want to be, but you don't know how, then Krishna will arrange that it'll work. And then later he also mentions that whatever the devotee lacks, he'll, you know, fill that, and whatever he has, he'll protect that. Yet this facility given by the Lord cannot justify unauthorized concoctions put forward by the process of devotional service in the name of spontaneous devotion. In this connection, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has stated, Bhagavat prapyartam pritan marga karanam tvati dushanavaham eva. If one manufactures his own process of devotional service for the sake of attaining the Supreme Lord, such a concoction will cause total ruination. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur goes on to quote, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidhim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpatai Yaiva Kalpate. Brahma Samhita 1.2.101. Right? So it's a very basic Bhakti Rasamrita, what did I say? Oh, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, see, this is, you know, when you on the advanced levels, like the tertiary level of education, when you go into something, right, the basic course, the fundamental course is 101. Right? Here it is. No? If one's so-called unalloyed devotion to Lord Hari does not take into account the regulations of the Shruti, Smriti, Puranas, and Pancharatra, it is nothing more than a disturbance to society. Yes. In other words, even if one is not learned in Vedic literatures, if he is engaged in the loving service of the Lord, he is to be accepted as a pure devotee. Nonetheless, such loving devotion cannot in any way contradict the injunctions of the revealed scriptures. So they won't do something that's against the scriptures because they're just doing those things to please Krishna. What do? They've heard from authority. They may not know all the things or why or technically, but they're following authority, doing what, therefore, it won't contradict. But if someone comes up with some idea that's separate from this, of the Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra, then it will contradict, and therefore it's just a disturbance to society. So that's why we don't make up our own process. We stick to the process of pure devotion, as it's given in these literatures. We have seen many sophisticated Sanskrit scholars and learned experts in the details of Vedic sacrifice, who can hardly even follow the basic principles of human life. Namely, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, and no intoxication. Such brilliant scholars and ritualistic performers are generally seen to be attached to a materialistic conception of life and are fond of mental speculation. Although in Bhagavad Gita the Lord himself has given perfect knowledge for all time, such so-called scholars consider themselves more intelligent than the Lord and thus speculate on the meaning of Vedic literature. Such speculation certainly constitutes a fall from perfect spiritual life. And what then is to be said of materialistic fruit of activities, which are illusory in every sense of the term? The transcendental devotees are able to remain aloof from the pollution of fruit of activity and mental speculation, and that is the essential purport of this verse. So they're able to stay and just stay situated in pure devotion. Whether they're great scholars, they know all the rituals, it doesn't matter. They have that faith in the process. They're following the process as they've gotten it from authorities. Right? So, yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has warned that the words yan astaya indicate that the exalted status of a Vaishnava can never be accorded to one who is not following the basic regulations of bhakti yoga. Nor can it apply to one who is sometimes serving Krishna and sometimes serving the illusory energy, Maya, by mental speculation or fruitive activities. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has concluded, in all dharmas other than Bhagavat Dharma, one must consider the conditioned soul's qualification. Right? So that's what makes it that this dharma anyone can follow. But a soul surrendered to the Lord is never confounded by error, because they'll always do things for Krishna, even if unqualified in all other respects. So all the other dharmas, they don't have qualification for, but they can perform bhakti. Right? So that's those who have qualifications in dharma and are proud of that, then many times they will claim that how can these people be devotees or be this or be Brahmins or all that because they lack these particular qualifications. So maybe on the Brahminical religious platform, the basic, the ritualistic aspect, one may not have so many qualities or develop. But the point is the purpose of that position, of that Brahminical culture, the purpose of those rituals is to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. And so in doing that, they're perfect. While these others, they may have those material qualifications, but they lack the spiritual. So what's the point? It's a waste of time. So that's the uniqueness of bhakti. That's why it doesn't make sense to anybody else who doesn't have faith in it. So as long as you have faith in the material, religious processes, you can't actually have faith in bhakti. You have to have faith in bhakti and then engage these religious processes. Right? But if it's only in the religious processes, then you can't understand bhakti. Just like by jnana, you can't understand the Lord by logic, even though you're very, very smart. Does that make sense? So that's the specialness of bhakti, why it won't be understood by the materialist. So we have to be careful in mixed devotion that we don't mix these things and think that there's a material qualification for. So most will say it depends upon your morality and ethic, ethicality. I mean, technically, morality, ethicality should be, but they won't use it that way. But what to do? So that defines your, and so others will say, no, but if you don't have knowledge, then what's the meaning of it, all this and that. So those who are scholars, they'll say that. But bhakti actually doesn't depend on either. Right? In other words, we're studying because it's hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord. Right? And we want to serve the Lord, so we like to learn the process. But it's not, we're not trying to become scholars. Right? In fact, if one's trying to be a scholar, one won't appreciate this kind of the devotional approach, the study of the devotional literature, because it just doesn't have the technicality that you're expecting. And when it does come, you can't understand it anyway because it's devotional. So someone is too fruitive, they won't like this. Someone is too academic, they won't like this. But a soul surrendered to the Lord is never confounded by error, even if unqualified in all other respects. His feet never stumble and he never falls. Even though wandering the world at whim, he always resides in an auspicious place by the influence of his unswerving worship. The unique potency of Bhagavad Dharma does not appear in any of the other dharmas of the world. Right? But it can empower the other if you connect it to Bhagavad Dharma. But it's because of its connection, that's why it has it, not that it has it inherently. There is no comparison between a surrendered individual who has taken shelter of Bhagavad Dharma and the practitioner of any other dharma. Right? Sri Kavi said, continue. In accordance with the particular nature one has acquired in conditioned life, whatever one does with body, word, mind, senses, intelligence, or purified consciousness, one should offer to the Supreme, thinking, this is for the pleasure of Lord Narayana. In this regard, Sri Krishna instructed Arjuna, 9:27, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. The BBT purport states, Srila Sridhar Swami has commented, Atmana chitena hankarena va anashrito ya swabhavas tasmat. Although one may still be in the bodily concept of life, he should offer the fruit of his work to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Because you think, this is my body, my facility, you and my work, my results, you do all that. Get that results, offer it to Krishna. Then all of that becomes purified because it's all engaged in that process ultimately. Right? So even you don't have, but with time by that you get purified, you start to get that knowledge. Then you understand it's all Krishna's anyway. Those with a primitive materialistic concept of the Supreme Lord consider the Lord present only in a temple or church. They take some offering to the Lord in the place of worship, but in their normal activities they claim proprietorship, not thinking that God is present everywhere and within everyone. We have practical experience of many so-called religious men who become very offended if their children try to become servants of the Supreme Lord. They feel, God should be pleased with whatever humble offering I give him, but my family and ordinary business affairs belong to me and are under my control. There's one person was saying when we were saying, no, but Prabhupada says this is what you're supposed to do. He's a householder in the house, he gives this direction. What's the thing? He's the founder of Charya. And then the person said, no, but in my house, I'm the founder of Charya. All right, conversation's over. So it's the same kind of thing, is that when I go to the temple, that's where the devotion is. And now, so when I walk out the door, it's my life. And I do what I want. And so when I want to worship Krishna, then I do. And when I don't, I don't. But it's connected to Krishna. They will get benefit. They'll move forward. But not as much as if they were able to appreciate beyond this limited, understanding. But it still will have devotional effect. They'll still move forward. Right?
Supreme personality of my 3 BHK.
Huh?
Supreme personality of my 3-bedroom apartment.
Yes. Wow. 3-bedroom, not bad. So you're a bigger supreme personality than someone with a 2-bedroom or a 1-bedroom. The perception of anything as separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his proprietorship is called maya or illusion. Srila Sridhar Swami has quoted, Na kevalam vidita kritam eveti niyamaha swabhavanu shari lokikam api. The regulation that one should serve the Supreme Lord does not refer only to prescribed religious paths, ceremonies, and regulations. Rather, all the activities one performs in this world, according to one's personal nature, should be dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So all of that has to be dedicated. It's not just a particular ritual or direct things that we see in the temple or a particular aspect. It's all aspects of one's life according to one's conditioning that should be offered, right? You can't offer something that's not your conditioning. Right? Does that make sense? You can't offer someone else's. You should surrender. Yes. Yes, he can surrender for me. Right? He surrendered on my behalf. Does he know that? He should.
Brahmanas can perform yajnas on somebody else's behalf, so they can also surrender.
Yes, but then you have to surrender to those Brahmins.
That's mine.
Yes, that is. Sri Kavi continued. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external, illusory energy of the Lord. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. Yeah, so you turn away from the Lord, you'll also forget your relationship with the Lord. So it's not you can turn away from the Lord and remember your position. You also forget your position. So that's why it's dangerous to avoid the Lord, avoid the devotees. Because then you'll forget your relationship. Right? This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and as his very life and soul. Yeah, so that's an intelligent person. Now, a politically correct person then may not accept the spiritual master as the worshipable deity and his life and soul, but we do remember that it said here, it used the word intelligent person. Footnote 6. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 37 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 7, entitled The Essential Nature of the Individual Soul, Jiva Tattva, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. So just the soul itself has to follow this process. Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. That fear or samsara takes two forms, the form of reversal and the form of forgetfulness. Reversal means thinking oneself to be the body. Forgetful means not remembering that one is soul. Right? So both, it has both aspects. A person becomes devoid of questions concerning the past and future, such as, who am I? What should I do? What was I before? What will I be after? This fear arises by the Maya of the Lord. It is said from loss of memory, intelligence is lost. And from loss of intelligence, one is destroyed, Bhagavad Gita 2:61. Because of this, the intelligent person, getting his intelligence by the mercy of Guru's lotus feet, should fully worship the Lord by pure bhakti, devoid of other desires, devoid of karma or jnana. This person considers the Guru to be as dear as the Lord and the self. Why? Because we see this process all goes by loss of memory. You lose memory, you lose intelligence, so then everything will fall apart. Right? So, therefore, then that taking shelter of the spiritual master and the directions given there, following those, then you can just go forward. Whether you fully understand it or not, you know all the Shastric background or not, it will work. And by following it, then all these things will be revealed. So that's how it actually works. If you ask, okay, so I just, you know, have devotional service and then I could close my eyes and start running. But how is that working? How is it you're situated? That's because you've taken shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. Right? That's how it works. So, make sense? And so then from this you have forgetfulness, so then you think you're the body, and then, what is it? Reversal means thinking oneself to be the body, forgetfulness means you're not the soul. So if you're not the soul, then what are you? But now remembering that you're a soul, saying we're not this body, we're the soul, but it's about the body, that's still reversal. Mm-hmm. Just you're using so-called non-forgetfulness to establish your position of reversal. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sri Kavi continued, although the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul experiences it as real under the influence of his own conditioned intelligence. This imaginary experience of a world separate from Krishna can be compared to the acts of dreaming and desiring. When the conditioned soul dreams at night of something desirable or horrific, or when he daydreams of what he would like to have or avoid, he creates a reality that has no existence beyond his imagination. So we do it all the time. So this is just extended that it's bigger. Right? So the actual point is it is all Krishna. It's all connected to Krishna. So the idea that there is such a thing that's not, that's the illusion. Make sense? Does that make sense? So that's the we'll call it. The tendency of the mind is to accept and reject various activities based on sense gratification. Therefore, an intelligent person should control the mind, restricting it from the illusion of seeing things separate from Krishna. And when the mind is thus controlled, he will experience actual fearlessness. Right? Because there's no fear. You know who you are. You have the relationship with Krishna. That can't be disturbed. So what's the fear? Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following. The mind is like an impetuous horse that even persons who have regulated their senses and breath cannot control. Those in this world who try to tame the uncontrolled mind, but who abandon the feet of their spiritual master, encounter hundreds of obstacles in their cultivation of various distressful practices. O unborn Lord, they are like merchants on a boat in the ocean who have failed to employ a helmsman. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-33. Right? Because what would be the reason? Why would you have some merchants in a boat in the ocean and they don't have a helmsman? What would be the cause? What would be the reason? Greed, yes. Because why are they in the boat on the ocean? Right? They want to do trade. So they're going someplace to do that. So now what is it going to be? It means the goods on their ship, the sale of that, that's going to get them their profit. Okay? And your profit is after expenses. So whatever that stuff costs you, you know, and whatever, you have the boat, it may be there, you got the boat, whatever it is. The helmsman's more expense. Right? So then they think, no, we can do this, but will it work? No, because they don't know how to sail the ocean. So Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.33. So that was like the prayers of the personified Venus, right? The BBT purport states, Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati Thakur has made the following comments on this verse. Quote, control of the mind is a result of living a life of devotional service to the Lord. By the influence of fixed devotional service, the accepting and rejecting mind can stop its thirst for sensory enjoyment apart from Krishna. So when one's fixed in devotional service, then the mind no longer needs to look for sense gratification to find a taste. It finds that taste in the service alone. It doesn't find these other things. So that's by Krishna's grace that we saw before. When you surrender to Krishna, when Krishna sees you're interested, then Krishna then puts you in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. Then following those instructions, Krishna being pleased, then he removes all the anarthas and unwanted things and gives that proper knowledge by which you can then come to him. So it's that dynamic of that whole thing between the Lord, the spiritual master, and the devotee trying to follow all these things. Yes? No? Very good? Yes. Sri Kavi continued. An intelligent person who has controlled his mind and conquered fear should give up all attachment to material objects such as wife, family, and nation, and should wander freely without embarrassment. Hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord, the bearer of the chariot wheel. The holy names of Krishna are all auspicious because they describe his transcendental birth and activities, which he performs within this world for the salvation of the conditioned souls. Thus, the holy names of the Lord are sung throughout the world. So, just concentrating on direct devotional activities, that's what the soul should be doing. So we see here they give the example of someone giving up dealing in family life and taking that up, like they have. They didn't even get involved. The four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, you know, Parikit Maharaj. So, like this, that we see so many, they have left this and gone to the forest with that, giving these things up. And in this way, then they surrender to the Lord and always hear and chant about the Lord. We also see the great kings and all that, they're doing this, like Yudhishthira Maharaj, even while within the household life. Right? It just may not be as obvious. You'd have to understand other symptoms to be able to see it. Right? So you can perceive the devotion. Then you know it's not karma. But in the same way, someone's renounced, how do you know that it's actually devotional? You have to know the symptoms of devotion. So whether they're renounced as a religious principle, or whether they're following very nicely their dharma of family life, you have to know the symptoms of bhakti to appreciate if it's pure devotional service. That makes sense.
With regards to the Shruti Smriti Pranadi, without the boat, without the captain, and complete divination, if you invent things, one theory that has developed is that as long as in our paddhati of chanting or deity worship or teaching, all the elements are spiritual, like Prabhupada's book, Prabhupada's picture, and Prabhupada's, you know, we talk Prabhupada's name a couple of times, then this automatically spiritualizes the entire invented paddhati also.
But how would that?
Because the book cannot be de-spiritualized, after all.
The book can be, but your cargo shorts can be. How is it? What's the connection between our particular mundane lifestyle, values, endeavors, results, engagement of our senses, engagement of the mind? What has that got to do with Bhagavad Gita? If we follow Gita, then it becomes spiritualized. But just saying that the book can't be de-spiritualized, therefore I'm spiritual, as if the book depends upon us, the book's independent. The book's always been spiritual, whether you knew about it or not. In other words, Bhagavad Gita was spiritual before we even knew about Krishna consciousness. So how does this have any logic to it? You know, it's just that we're, no one's going to disagree that the book's not spiritual. How does that prove your philosophy?
In this project, even though it is wrong, it invented, but we are sadly selling the book. And okay, even this is not
about... We're selling the book.
Yeah.
So what's selling the book got to do with their invented lifestyle? So what I'm saying is why they're saying the two things. Like, you know, if I say, you know, how you say, I'm the most, you know, one, I'm the most advanced devotee in the world. And say, how can you say that? So you're saying, you know, how you say Bhagavad Gita is not spiritual? Yeah, Bhagavad Gita is spiritual. Then? Yeah, what do the two have to do with each other?
Proximity.
Oh, you happen to have a Gita in your house, and
yes,
therefore, since you're always centered on your house and thinking of your house, therefore, the Gita is in the house, and therefore, then, this way, your consciousness is always purified because the Gita is in your house, even though you don't think about the Gita.
There. We just read in the morning. Remember? Jiva and Prakriti? Because of proximity.
Oh, by proximity, then. Okay, yes, yes. Yeah, but unfortunately that works for Shankya, it doesn't work for Bhakti. I mean, by association with the pure devotees, you take on those qualities. Like that. But it's not necessarily they take on yours. Otherwise, why would they want to associate with you? Like that. So that's the whole point. How is that based on Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, and Pancharatra? So then how can that be a basis? All it is that, see, basically it comes down to there is a certain degree of faith in devotional service and in the goal of devotional service, to develop love for Krishna, and in the basic process of the direct activities of devotional service to some degree or another, whether you believe in following them in actuality or just by mentally, you know, some kind of aspect or whatever it is. But there's faith in the process. And it's also understood that material attachment is not good. Sense gratification is not good. But if we have, and so those things are there, and so those are strong points. The weakness comes up is that if we have attachment to these mundane things, and we have attachment to the social prestige of not being attached to them, then we have to create a philosophy to prove that our attachment to them is actually transcendental. And so that's then where it starts to get strange. But the point is if the devotee's humble, he accepts that I'm attached to these things, it's not ideal, but I'm trying my best. And then because of that, others have no problem. Nobody has problem with the child. They're trying their best, they're not perfect. But if that child becomes proud and he knows everything, doesn't care for anybody, whatever he's doing and everybody else should be doing, then at that time, then, you know, it's time for, you know, some discussion. You know what I'm saying? So why create that? Just take the humble position and move forward. You know what I'm saying? If one's attached to, one's conditioned by, one's used to that, one can't relate to others, great, in that position, you take that and connect it to Krishna. Who's saying not? You like a certain lifestyle, a certain food, a certain dress, a certain language, a certain whatever it is, try to connect that to Krishna. See that it's all Krishna, because it all is. And you'll become purified. But just seeing the house is the potency of Krishna is purifying. It won't give you pure devotion, but it'll purify you. That the house is being engaged to please Krishna as a person, like I'm using it for programs for Krishna, to be Krishna conscious, family members are being Krishna conscious, and like that, performing sadhana, then you can say is that will help develop prema. But where we're not really inclined towards those aspects in our personal life, you know, let's say we go to the temple or we have certain aspects and we do, that's nice. That's good. That's solid. But in the indirect, at least if we see it connected to the Lord and understand that I have attachments, it's not ideal, but at least I can see it in connection with the Lord, you will get purified. Right? That's what it says. But if we try to keep our social prestige and avoid this philosophy, then we're not following anything, and then how we'll get any benefit. Because even on the material platform, even the successful materialists, you know, that have some culture and tradition, don't like people that are proud and make up their own philosophies to support their own position. You know what I'm saying? So that's why we have to be careful, is that we might speculate due to our conditioning and come up with our own idea. You know, like I was saying, that one person said, I'm the founder acharya of my house. It's a speculation. Why bring that up? What's the point? You want to do whatever you want in the house? Do that. Why use this as an authority that it's all right? You know, just you're attached. Do what you want to do. Who's going to complain? And if you don't talk about it, then, you know, who's going to bother you? But if you try to say, no, I can do this, it's my right, then of course the people are going to get disturbed. You know? Does that make sense? The way you do at home, you know, what does anybody else care? At least people introduced in pure devotion don't care. Like that. Others may care, but those interested in pure devotion don't care. What they want to see is that you have that surrender, that faith in Krishna, you're trying to move forward, you're trying to apply in your life as much as you can. And that is more powerful than all the attachment in the world. But it requires that humility. The desire to give that up. But we're comfortable with it. In fact, we're saying it's good. In fact, we're saying this is devotional. So, in fact, we're saying this is equal to, you know, all these other devotional activities. Then there we're not dealing with anything devotional at all. So that's the difficulty. Does that make sense? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Premananda.